chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm delighted to have Pat Combs on the show today. Pat is a senior VP of consulting at Team Analytics and the chairman and founder of Combs Capital Partners. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Pat Combs, welcome to the Something Extra podcast today. I am looking so forward to our discussion. And, you know, you need to put your seatbelt on. And the other thing I didn't tell you about beforehand is you and I need to talk super duper fast because no, I'm totally teasing about that. But I've only got about 20 pages of notes here. There's so much I want to talk about. And so, I didn't mean that we're going to talk fast, but, you know, we are going to cover a lot of material, I hope. And I just know that your wisdom and your story, everything, there's just so much good, rich things to talk about here. I know it's going to help our listeners.
Oh, Lisa, thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure for me to join you. And I mean, ever since the day you and I met through the CEO Forum, you and Greg, and just love and adore you and love what you're doing. So thank you so much for allowing me to come on with you today.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Well, let's just get right in. You've already said we met through CEO Forum. We've met a lot of awesome people through there, haven't we, Pat? And you and I have been in some workshops together and, you know, all kinds of things. And then we go to Focus on the Family events and we see you and Christina at Focus on the Family event. So it's just awesome when we can, our orbits can kind of collide like that. But let's just get right into it. And growing up, did you grow up in Houston?
I did. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought you did because, you know, of some things that I had read. But, you know, I know that growing up, I don't know about siblings. Did you have siblings? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I do. Yeah, I have a natural sister who's just a year behind me and then a stepbrother. And then I also have a half sister. So we were the blended family.
Awesome. Well, lots of kids to play with. And that's, you know, I know that you grew up with a love of sports. As a young boy, you loved sports. I think I chuckled when I read this, Pat, because you liked boxing and wrestling. And one day your grandfather was taking you to sign up for Little League and you thought you were going to sign up for boxing lessons.
I did. Yeah, to my surprise. And we got to the Little League signup and I'm like, why are we here? I don't want to play baseball. And my grandfather said, no, son, you need to play baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think that he thought it was such a good idea for you to play baseball?
Oh, gosh. My grandfather grew up in the Boston area. And of course, we still have a lot of extended family there. But he was a huge Red Sox fan. And our family was really big into sports. But baseball in particular was my grandfather's favorite. And so, there were a couple of reasons. One, all the neighborhood kids, we all played Little League together. And I think he felt like, hey, this would be good for you. You know, my mom had gotten divorced just a few years earlier. And she was on the verge of getting remarried. But, you know, we were living with my grandparents at that time. And I think my grandfather just felt like this would be good for you. It's good for you to be involved with the community and all the kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah, good grandfather, and had we'll get into it, but think he had a little foresight too.
He did.
And we'll get into that. But you know, I also laughed and chuckled when you, and I was thinking about this, and I've just been kind of noodling and letting this percolate a little bit, Pat, because I've heard this word a lot here recently, and I'm thinking there is something there. But when you were 12 years old, you started your own lawn care business. And I read where you took 25% of your earnings and to go buy baseball cards. And this is the part that really got me though, Pat. You love collecting these baseball cards. And you said you had a dream that one day what?
Yeah, I had a dream that one day I would have my face on a baseball card.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And like I said, I've just been hearing the dream part so much from so many people recently, Pat. And I think that is one of the things that we need to make sure and we ensure that kids can dream, right? And then they have, yeah, it's so important to have dreams.
Right. Yeah, and that story, Lisa. I get a little emotional because it was my uncle. He got me into collecting cards, and he just passed away. Yeah.
Oh, he did. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a great story though.
He had a profound impact on you, obviously.
He did. Yeah. And he was a card collector, and he would share his collection with me. And it was one day I looked up at him and said, you know, Uncle Chet, I'm going to have my face on that baseball card. Yeah. So it happened.
It did. And we're going to talk about that. I just love all of that. Thank you for sharing that, Pat. Well, Greg collected baseball cards too. Okay. And, you know, Greg's about the same age of you, Pat, and he collected baseball cards. And I remember we were dating in college, and I thought he went to sell his baseball cards, and I thought he was buying me an engagement ring. And you know, he ended up buying his first computer. And I'm so grateful that he did, because obviously that has been his passion and that has been the way we've made our living, you know, since then. But I just remember going, and I was a little bit, my nose was a little bit out of joint when I found out that instead of buying me an engagement ring, he went and bought a computer. I got the engagement ring a little bit later, though. That was totally fine. That's probably.
How about the foresight with that story, right? Greg buying a computer.
Exactly. Yes, he bought his first computer and started teaching himself how to program. And now, you know, I mean, that's been our livelihood. We do with Technology Partners. So, you know, I just love all of that. But you went to, I think you started out at Rice, which mm-hmm. is Rice University, which is a fantastic university in Houston. But then you went over to the Bears. So you went on to Waco and went to university at Baylor, majored in finance. You know, something really interesting about you, Pat, is I know you were a collegiate athlete and you represented Team USA in the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah.
And how was that experience?
Gosh, Lisa, it was, absolute dream come true. They just introduced baseball into the Olympics in '84. And then by the time I got to college, you know, they were still at that point, the U.S. was using amateur players for the Olympic team. So I knew that that was out there. And it wasn't necessarily a goal of mine. But as we got closer to those teams being picked, I really wanted to be a part of that. I mean, obviously, to put the USA on your chest and play for your country. I mean, there was no greater honor I've ever had in my life than to do that for two summers. And so I was on the 87 and 88 USA national teams. And then, of course, in 88, we were the first team to win the gold in the Olympics in Seoul.
That is so incredible. And I think like they only chose 40 players. I mean, that was really what a phenomenal experience, Pat. What a phenomenal experience. But you were really great at Baylor. You received the All-American and an academic All-American. So you were kind of a scholar athlete, which, you know, that's not always the case. But you were very good, you know, academically, too. So you kind of were the whole package, Pat.
Well, you know, I always took my studies seriously. And I just felt like even as a young you know, person in elementary school, I just had dreams to go to college and really wanted to get my degree. Nobody in my family had ever graduated from college. So that was just a big goal for me. And even with baseball, the way it was developing, and I knew at some point I was going to get a chance to play professionally. I still felt like regardless of how my baseball career goes, I need to have an education, and that's going to last me the rest of my life. And baseball may only last, you know, 4, 5, 10 years at the most. So I wanted to be ready for whatever, you know, was in front of me.
Yeah. Oh, that's great advice, too, is, you know, Pat, I think, you know, for whatever. I mean, you know, we had a son that went to Hollywood and was an actor for a while. But it's great to have that education, right? Because that, to your point, it may not last forever. You know, we'll kind of talk a little bit about that, you know, because it could be for a number of reasons, right? Injuries and all sorts of things. But in 88, you were in the first round, you were drafted in the first round to play professional baseball for the Philadelphia Phillies. And something else I learned about you, Pat, is you're a left-handed pitcher.
Yes.
Yeah, you're a left-handed
pitcher.
Yeah, you've been a left-handed pitcher for your whole life. And I did not realize that, but some people say there's research out there that says that lefties rule. I mean, there's a number of reasons for that. So interesting. 10% of the population are left-handed, but 25% in the MLB are left-handed pitchers or, you know, left-handed or, you know, batters or whatnot. You know, that's really interesting. But, you know, there's probably, I don't know if you've read the research behind that, but lefties rule, and you've got some greats, right? Barry Bonds, you know, who else? Babe Ruth was a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah. Andy Pettit.
Yeah. Andy, of course, Arsen Musial here in St. Louis with the Cardinals, right? Was a left-handed pitcher.
Man, that's right.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of truth to that in terms of, I would tell young parents, if you want to have a child playing in the major leagues, you need to tie their right hand behind their back after they're born, make them left-handed. And then if that doesn't work, just make him a catcher. So either a left-handed pitcher or a catcher is the quickest way to the big leagues. But, yeah, great point, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that was very interesting. Well, here's the deal. You got drafted in the first round, but here's what I want to read. I thought this was really funny. You go, you know, back when the draft was happening, it wasn't televised. You got a call, and the guy on the other end said, "My name is Cotton Nye, and I'm with the Phillies. We want to let you know that we picked you for the draft." What was your reaction, Pat?
I thought it was a friend playing a joke on me because, yeah, we didn't have all the television and all that back then. And I'd never heard of Cotton Eye. And I was told that the scout who is in charge of letting you know would be the scout that drafts you. And so I had no contact with the Phillies. I thought it might be the Angels, the Pirates, the Astros. Nobody from the Phillies had ever contacted me. So when he called, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was a buddy of mine just playing a joke on me, and I hung up on him.
Yeah, you hung up. And then I assume he called back and said, "No, this really is Cotton Eye from the Phillies."
Thankfully, he did. He said, "No, this is really Cotton, and I need to talk with you, and I need to come visit with you and present a professional contract." And I'm like, "Oh, so sorry. I didn't mean to hang up on you." But he got a kick out of it. He thought that was funny as well. And we met just a few days later, and the Phillies presented their contract to me.
Right. Well, they had, you know, what he told you was they'd been undercover for about three seasons watching you, and you didn't even know it, you know. So there's a lesson there, isn't there, Pat?
Yeah, there is.
You never know who's in the stands. You never know who's in the stands. You know, Pat, this is really funny. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but, you know, I got invited in 2017 to meet with President Trump at the White House. And something similar happened to me. So a call came into the office on a Wednesday, and it said, "This is the White House calling for Lisa Nichols. We want to invite her to come to the White House on Monday. And so the person that took the phone call seriously thought that I was being punked. They said, no, literally, we will be sending an email tonight. So I get this call and I'm like, yeah, right. You know, what in the world? This is some sort of scam or something. But sure enough, it was not a scam. And I, you know, found myself in the Roosevelt room on that Monday. But yeah, but I was the same way. I'm like, this can't be real, you know. So I
that's a great story.
Yeah, I totally relate to that story. But, you know, you went on, so you played for 8 different seasons because you also played for the Milwaukee Brewers, I know. But I want to just ask you, what were some of the key lessons that you learned from playing professional baseball? And I know there's probably too many to enumerate, but give me a few of them anyway.
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. You know, I'm so grateful I had that opportunity. I mean, I was on the kind of the fast track. I got drafted by the right team at the right time, the Phillies, and they were needing pitching. They had come off a big playoff run in the mid 80s and had, traded away a lot of their young talent to help the team at that time. So for me, getting there was just a fast track to get to the big leagues. And so I was the first player in Major League history to go A, AA, AAA to the big leagues in one professional season, my first season. And so I guess what I learned was the preparation that I had, the coaching that I had prior to even getting drafted, and really taking my craft seriously in that way, Lisa, to try to be the best I could be, really prepared me. And then, of course, playing on the USA teams, playing against some tremendous international competition, there really is no replacement for that kind of experience to prepare you for something at that level, that stage, you know, in the big leagues. And so I was so grateful I had those opportunities. And some of those, you know, I think looking back, you put yourself in positions to create great opportunities. And I think once you get those, to be able to take advantage of it. So the preparation, the discipline, the hard work, all of those things that we talk about and try to teach, you know, the younger generation, it really does come back at some point when you have that opportunity to go through a door that maybe you never thought could be open. So I was grateful for that. And then grateful for, you know, the people that I would say, Lisa, that loved me beyond just my talent, people who wanted a relationship with me, not just because I was a baseball player, because they really cared for me. And a lot of people along the way who have spoken truth in my life that helped me to mature and just, you know, knock off a lot of those rough edges I had as a young person. And so I'm grateful for that, grateful for the experiences I had. And then when I was in Major League Baseball, I think, you know, there were things that I saw, things that I participated in that I look back on and think, gosh, I'm so glad I didn't do some things. I'm so glad I was able to learn some of those lessons early in life and make some pivots, especially personally and behaviorally, because there were just some things that I was exposed to, things I got involved in that I knew were not going to be good long term. So even with all that I experienced, I was glad that I went through some struggles and then ultimately having to leave the game because of injury, which was really difficult. But knowing that I was prepared for life after baseball. So that was also part of it.
Yeah, no, that's so good. Yeah, because, yeah, and to your point, I mean, you ultimately had an elbow injury, you know, that really, but, you know, you had that foundation of an education, Pat, that you could lean on then, you know, with your bachelor's in finance. So, you know, I want to talk about this and then we'll take a quick break. So, you know, and this is really, I just told you, I think this is so good. And I want to buy a bunch of copies of this for people that work with kids. But, you know, you wrote the book back in 2020. It was published in 2020, Pat, More Than the Score: How Parents and Coaches Can Cultivate Virtue in Young Athletes. I love that. And you've got, and I don't know if we'll have time to go through there, but, you know, you've got about 10 tips for helping young athletes learn how to play for more than the score. And I would love just to touch on a few of those. But why did you write the book, first of all? Why did you write that book?
Yeah, I wrote it because I've been coaching. Of course, I've stayed in baseball with broadcasting, and I've also stayed in baseball through coaching youth at, you know, 16 to 17 year olds typically. And more and more, the last probably 10 years, at least, I've had these questions from parents and even coaches, other coaches that said, you know, you raised your 3 sons through youth sports. It looks like, you know, externally, at least, that your kids were successful. They've all gone on to earn multiple degrees, master's degrees, MBAs, and they did sports right. You know, they were great teammates. They were great leaders. They just did a lot of things right. You know, what can you teach us? What can you show us? And I just get into the book about how parents and coaches can help cultivate virtue in our youth athletes. And to me, Lisa, the biggest reason is I think sports is the greatest platform that we have to teach our kids about life and to teach them character and to teach them values, the things that are going to last the rest of their lives that they can learn on the sports field. So there was a lot of lessons that Christina and I were able to teach our kids through sports and the things that we learned that we would do differently. I put those in the book too, some of the things that we thought we could change up. But a lot of the things that we did, we felt were successful because our boys had a great experience. I think each of them would tell you that, of course, there were challenges, but they learned so much just from the game. And they've now gone on to become successful young leaders in their careers. And so, I just wanted to write about those things.
Yeah, I love it. I really love it. You know, you say something here. There's a quote here. It says, you can create the kid for the path or the path for the kid. And I love that. You know, I mean, you have a choice there, right? But Pat, 72% of youth in America are involved in sports.
Yeah.
That translates to about 40 million kids that are involved in sports. So, you know, having a tool like what you wrote, you know, I think is just so amazing. And I want to get it into the hands of more coaches and parents. But, you know, let's just go through a few of these tips and we're just going to be able to touch the tip of the iceberg. But I hope people will go out and buy the book. We'll put that in the show notes so people can go and purchase that. But, you know, first of all, you said get your why right. We've already talked about that a little bit. You know, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And hopefully, you know, your child may go on to play Major League Baseball like Pat did, but, you know, maybe not. But what are those virtues and what are those things that you're teaching them along the way, right?
Exactly, Lisa. That's the biggest piece of the book is the perspective. And I really want parents and coaches to have the right perspective. You know, I show up to fields now and I hear so much yelling and screaming and, you know, carrying on and some of these behaviors that are just so unhealthy for kids. And I'm like, man, we've lost perspective in many times, you know, and when you hear about what we're trying to get accomplished, it's a scoreboard. Is that the why? Do you show up at the youth fields to root your kids on because you're so concerned about the score or so concerned about their performance that day? And that's when we've lost perspective, because these are the foundational pieces that our kids are going to learn that are going to carry with them for their entire lives. And I want them to learn, you know, how to be a great teammate, how to be a great leader, how to work through adversity. That's what sports teaches us, how to overcome adversity. And in today's age, boy, that's a huge deal. There's so much softness with what we're doing with our kids today. They're not learning those great lessons. And I think they can do that on the sports field.
Yeah, that's really good. I love that. Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, you want a competitive spirit. You want to, you know, to be there to do your best, you know, right, Pat? But it's not all about winning. And the other thing that you brought up, you said performance. And if parents are so concerned about the performance, there is a possibility that your child is going to link their performance with their identity and their value. And that's a dangerous place to be.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And Lisa, I think Christina, my wife, would tell you that there's probably very few people as competitive as I am when it comes to everything in life. I want to win. I want to win more than anything. But I also had to know how to use that effectively with our sons and exactly right. Not make their identity about that number on the scoreboard or that number by their batting average. It really had to come down to, you know, what are you learning? And you know, in every game, I would ask them, hey, guys, what went well today? And we would talk about it. And then I would ask them, hey, what could you have done to improve or what could you have done better? And I would just ask those questions, Lisa. And those would be the evening conversations typically after a game. I wanted them to digest that, to learn from the game. You know, we would try to redirect towards the character things and the values that they could pull from that particular experience. And to me, that was way more important than just, hey, how did did you feel good about the win today? You know,
exactly. Well, I love that. And I read that about you, Pat, that win or lose, your kind of your routine after a game was to go get ice cream or shaved ice or whatever, and just win or lose and do a retrospective. But it wasn't about, you know, what could you have done differently, you know, to have won, you know, or whatever, you know. It was more about those character traits. So I love that. Another thing that you said, and I do see this, and I know I was guilty of this too, Pat, you know, with our own children when they were growing up, but you know, how do we come along beside them and bless them? How do we stay out of the way and not make our dreams their dreams? Make sure that you dream with them and not for them.
Yeah, absolutely, Lisa. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That really is the key, you know, and we all want our kids to do well there. And there's nothing wrong with that. I encourage parents to root for your kids, you know, help them in every aspect of life. But we've got to know where to draw that line too, and understand that, you know, it's okay for them to fail. In fact, I wanted my kids to fail, not in a way that would hurt them or be painful, but I wanted them to feel that, experience that. And that's how they overcome those things. And like I would tell my sons, you know, if you feel bad about your performance, what do you have to do? I would ask them that question. And they would tell me, Dad, I got to work harder. I got to get better at this. I need to develop this. And so we would encourage that for sure. But yeah, I think when parents start to dream for their kids, that's when we cross the line. We become, you know, helicopter parents, lawnmower parents. There's a lot of these terms we use now, but that's when we're starting to try to get in the way of that path. We're trying to, you know, carve the path for our kid instead of creating our kids for the path. And that was always the thing that Christina and I wanted to stress with our parenting was, you know, it's okay to let our kids experience toughness, and you know, when they fall down, we'll be there to support them. But we wanted them to learn from those mistakes and let them experience that as well.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, we've got a lot more here we could talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Pat Combs.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Pat Combs. And we've already been talking about baseball and just youth sports and all kinds of awesome things. But I want to move into this, Pat, because I know, just in knowing you in the years that I have, I know your faith is very, very important to you. But what I did not realize is that you came to faith through a baseball chapel. You'll tell me about that story?
I did, yeah. So grateful that, you know, when I was in baseball, this is back after I got drafted in 1988. You know, I started my pro career in 89 after the Olympic year. And it was during spring training of 89. It was March of that year that I met a local pastor named Steve Kreloff. But the story really started in the locker room. It was, you know, I'd been in spring training for a couple of weeks. The pitchers and catchers usually report first, then the position players come. And Mike Schmidt, the all-star Hall of Fame third baseman for the Phillies, shows up, which would be his last year to play. And it was during our first Sunday that the position players were there that Schmidt said, "Hey, guys, we've got chapel around the corner in the media room." And I saw some guys getting up to go. And I was thinking to myself, gosh, I thought I got away from this stuff after I left Baylor. Why do I have to go to chapel now? But it was voluntary. I get into the room. I sit down next to Mike Schmidt and a few other players. And in walks this pastor, a local pastor named Steve Kreloff from Clearwater Community Church. And I looked at Mike. I said, "Well, where's the rest of the team?" He says, "No, this is voluntary. You don't have to be here." So I started to get up and leave. And he grabbed me and said, "No, you're going to listen to this message." So thankful to Mike Schmidt for keeping me there that morning, because the message I heard from Steve Kreloff was that he grew up as a Jewish child in a Jewish home, and came to Christ through an experience with a roommate And then eventually went to Moody Bible College, became a full-time pastor. And that message just resonated with me as I grew up in a traditional church home. We weren't, you know, church goers, but we considered ourselves okay. And if you wanted to, if we wanted to say Christian, I guess we could say Christian, but we really didn't. I didn't know Jesus or Christ from Adam. So, but I heard that message that morning and it just resonated with me. And at the end of the message, Steve Kreloff said, "Hey, if you have not ever trusted Jesus to be your savior, this is an opportunity." And I did that morning. And then Steve approached me and noticed that I'd been praying that prayer. And he just said, "Hey, I'd love to meet with you while you're here in spring training before you get off for your season. Would you mind meet with me at my office maybe a couple times a week?" And I did for the next 6 weeks over spring training. He walked me through the Navigator Study Series, and I did books 1 through 6. And that really cemented my relationship with Christ before I left for the baseball season.
Oh, that is what a great story. So it was the Navigators that you went through.
It was, yeah, the Navigators Discipleship Series back then. It was like 6 little mini booklets. And he asked me to do a booklet a week, and we'd go to his office, and we'd sit there for hours and talk about the answers and what I was learning. And it was just really a truly a true discipleship experience, which really made the difference for me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lesson there too, Pat. You know, you heard the word, you accepted the word, but the discipleship part is so important to really get it down into your DNA. And then I think you just became in love with the Bible and started reading on your own and growing. And like I said, I mean, so how is your faith, would you say, like informed, like how you've done your work and how you've raised your children and just how you've lived life? I mean, what, you know, how's your faith been integrated into that?
Yeah, Lisa, it's foundational to everything about me. And I think my friends, my family would tell you that, you know, I fell in love with God's word. I try to walk it out, live it out daily. I think that does make the difference for us in terms of others who recognize that, you know, we're different. We're doing things different. We talk different. We behave differently. So it is. And I've been able, thankfully, I had the great experience I had in baseball, but it allowed me to get involved with other organizations where faith and sports and business, you know, cross. And I've just had the opportunity to lead others and talk to others about Jesus. And that's just the most important thing in my life. I mean, I love business. I love sports. I love competing. But nothing comes before my walk with Christ and how I live that out daily and what he's done in my life.
Yeah, I love that. You know, just talking about it being, I mean, just a firm foundation, right? For everything else, Pat, you've got that firm foundation and then all of these other things are building blocks on top of it. But if the foundation is weak, you know, that's when we can get ourselves in trouble. That's for sure. Well, in your career, you've done so much in your career. You began in wealth management. You had a career at Morgan Stanley for 11 years, I think. You, just like in baseball, you ascended to the top 5% of advisors. You had great success there. I think you managed $1 billion in assets. Really great. But then you also, and then now you've got Combs Capital, and I think you founded that with one of your sons, didn't you?
I did, yeah. My middle son, Connor. Yeah, we thought it'd be a great idea to start a wealth management firm right in the middle of the COVID pandemic. So we did that in October of 2020. But it was truly
time
a blessing.
Is everything, yeah. Pat.
I'm telling you, it was a true blessing. You know, I've just been so blessed in that way, Lisa, with great clients, great families who we've had a chance to work with for a long time. And Connor joined me in the business. He actually started, worked for a former partner of mine. And my partner called me one day and said, "Hey, he's ready. You guys need to do your own thing." And so that was the catalyst for starting Combs Capital. But yeah, it has really been a blessing working with my son, and he's growing like crazy every day. He loves the business, which I'm so grateful for. But yeah, we're having a blast, Lisa. We really are. He really just runs the day to day. I'm the chairman of the company, but he calls me in when he needs me. We talk strategy every morning. But yeah, it's just been really, really cool to have that experience with my son.
That's so awesome. Well, I was just thinking, Pat, I don't know if we mentioned this on the sidebar or here while we were recording. We may have mentioned it in the sidebar. I'm not sure. But Casey, your youngest son, was a pitcher for the Marlins. or a catcher for the Marlins, and now he's a baseball coach. So, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You know, you've got one son that's in the financial services and the other son that's ran with the baseball. That's so awesome. But here's what I want to really spend some time on, because I think this is going to really help our listeners as well. And I hope, and again, we have such limited time, we're going to be able just to scratch the surface here, Pat, but I do think it'll help our listeners. I want our listeners to go get this book. You have worked a lot with Flip Flippin there in Dallas. I think he's in Southlake. We're closer to Fort Worth, but he owns the Flipping Group. You know, and I know this is funny to me because I know it's not funny. I guess it just makes sense, because I know one of the things that you have just had a passion for people your whole life, and developing people, whether that is, you know, older people or youth. Right. And so I think that that just makes total sense that you're working with Flip in the work that you're doing here. But, you know, tell our listeners just a snippet about the Flippin' Group and why, you know, why it's different, because it is different. You know, it looks at a different, the flip side, no pun intended, of kind of like strength finders and things like that, which I'm a big proponent of strength finders. But when I got introduced to this work in 2015, 2016, I think it was, Pat, by you, I'm like, this makes total sense to me and something we need to pay attention to. So tell us a little bit about the Flippin' Group and, you know, what all they do.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Lisa. You know, it goes back about 25 years ago when I met Flip, and Flip and Susan are just so different in terms of great leaders, obviously dear, dear friends. But Flip helped me as I was making that transition out of baseball into business and helped me to grow as a leader. And it was through this behavioral assessment that he gave me. And I mean, Flip was like, he was reading my mail. He knew everything about me just by looking at this behavioral assessment. And it's a 360 base as well. So it wasn't just my data. It was also the people around me that knew me well. And Flip was telling me things. And I, at one point, argued with him and said, Flip, I don't think that's true. And he said, well, he goes, see, on this criticality scale, you see yourself this way, but you've got everybody else sees you over here. So that's a problem. You need to grow this area. And I said, well, Flip, I just don't agree with that. And he said, well, sweetie bear, today's your lucky day, because you've got a lot of people who agree that that's an area for you to work on. So I was so happy about that. I did grow that. Flip put me on a growth track. So I was kind of one of those hair club for men, Lisa. I experienced it. I grew. My wife was impacted by it. My family was impacted by it. It changed my direction in my career. It really did. And so I took that tool out to Tom House, who at that time was kind of known as the guru for working with pro athletes, especially quarterbacks and pitchers. We ran guys like Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan through it. And it was incredible the differences it made in their careers, their lives. And so I came back and said, Flip, I want to join you. And we went on this now course of 25 years working alongside each other. Cause again, it just meets my passion, Lisa, of wanting to bring out the best in people. And when I know that behaviorally, we all have things we can work on. We all have things we can improve on. But when you ask leaders, even some top CEOs in the country today that we've had the privilege of working with, when we ask them, hey, what's the number one behavior you need to work on to improve your performance or improve your leadership? Most of them can't tell you. And so this 360-based assessment really identifies quickly what it is we can do to grow. It also identifies our behavioral strengths. We want to continue leveraging those strengths. We also at the same time want to work on those constraints, the things holding us or our teams back. And when we can do that, boy, that's a formula for success like I've never seen before. And not only does it change a leader, we can then also help teams change the dynamic of just tweaking some behaviors. And so that's been a privilege of mine. It's been an honor and just really cool to work alongside some of the top leaders on the planet to be able to help them grow and get better and improve who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. You know, here's a quote. Could it be that the things that hold you back or constrain you are far more reliable indicators of your success than the skills or talents you may possess? So you can have skills and talents, but, you know, we all, whether we want to admit it or not, we have blind spots. We have constraints, things that we may not even be aware of that's going to hold us back from being all that we've been purposed to be, Pat. And I think that that is what, you know, is so unique about the work that you guys are doing.
Amen.
I love, part three is called Overcoming Your Personal Constraints, which is really important. So you read the book, people. I just cannot stress it enough. Reach out to Pat if you want to know more. It's a New York Times bestseller. It's called The Flip Side. So the flip side of the coin, but break free from the behaviors that hold you back. And if you want to be the best version of you, you know, you've got to pay attention to those things. So, yeah, I told you, I even pulled out because you were so kind back in that day. You're like, Lisa, I want you to be part of this study.
Yeah.
And so administered and got some time with Flip. So it was really great. But, you know, Pat, this is called Something Extra. Something Extra is the common thread through every one of our episodes. What do you believe, Pat, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. I think, you know, just taking what we just talked about and the other part of that piece with Flip and what I learned is that our legacy really is attached to our behavior. You know, and you think back to like two scales that we look at, the need to nurture and criticality, and those things have to be in balance. You know, I want to be a nurturing leader, a connected leader, a team player, all of those things that are great, great skills and character traits. But I also want to be a leader that challenges and helps grow people. And so I've got to have those two things in balance. And so when we talk about legacy and that there's something more, Lisa, I think about our legacy that starts with behaviors. But the reason that's so important is because, you know, when you think about what that leads to in our lives, you know, how are we going to draw people to Christ? How are we going to draw people to our businesses and create great environments for them to work in? If we're not growing ourselves, if we're not paying attention to those legacy factors that are going to either hurt us or help us. And so when I think about legacy, I think about a couple of things. One is, how will people remember me? And I want to be remembered well. But what's more important is I think about my perpetual legacy. And when I think about that, that goes to the depths of who I am spiritually and how God created me to walk this earth. And I think about the people that will either come to him because of that legacy, or if I get in the way of that, Lisa, God forbid I get in the way of somebody coming to him because I allowed my behavior to become an impediment. And so I think when we think about that, you know, a lot of times people want to tie legacy to financial things you're going to give away, the generosity that you may have set up, your estate planning, all those. And those are all great things. But even more important to me is, what is your perpetual legacy going to look like when God calls you home? And will you be the one that people flock to because they saw something different in you, that they saw a Christ follower in you that they wanted to be attached to, and they eventually made that decision to follow Jesus as their Savior? To me, that's far, far more important than anything financially we could ever leave in terms of legacy.
Oh, that's just beautiful. You got me teary-eyed, Pat. I love it. Well, listen, my friend, I have had so much fun with you today. Thank you so much. I know how busy you are, so I just appreciate you carving out some time to be with me today on the Something Extra podcast.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It has been an absolute pleasure. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.